Today is still September 8th, 2021, and this is episode number 555 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, master of jazz hands. You can't tell what I'm doing. Anyway, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. I'm still doing the jazz hands. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That will take you to our Facebook group. Now, I am pleased as punch that Jeff Gamet was able to once again be Johnny on the spot and step in for me and be today's guest host, Jeff.
Ryan, I am so happy to be here.
Oh, I'm happy to have you here, man. Happy to have you here. You were helping out for a couple of weeks while Charlotte was out of town. It was nice.
It was a lot of fun. And I have to say, Charlotte has big shoes to fill, which is surprising for such tiny feet.
Yeah.
So I hope I did okay filling in for her.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to say yes.
Well, thanks. I mean, that's the most I could ask.
That is the most you can ask. Now, we love palindromes here, you and I.
We do.
And we have often noted in the past that numbers are not palindromes.
Correct.
So you did
we
some
have
research.
Noted that in the past.
You did some research.
I did. Now, how many years did it take for me to decide to do that Google search?
It's like 8 years. I don't know. It's been forever.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is on brand. So I did the research because, you know, we've been saying all along that a number that reads the same forwards and backwards is not a palindrome.
Consistent. We've been consistent.
We have been very consistent. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for consistency.
So, Jeff, is there a name for a number that reads the same forwards and backwards?
Yes, Brian, there is, in fact,
really? Do tell.
A word, and it is palindromic number.
It's a palindromic number. Is it nomic number or nomic number?
Nomic.
Huh. Grammatically, it would be nomic.
Well, maybe we're talking about a difference in inflection based on where each of us learned to speak English.
Vowel followed by a consonant followed by vowel should be long. The first vowel should be long. That okay. ain't regional. That's just right and wrong, brother.
Okay. Consonant, vowel, consonant.
Vowel, consonant, vowel. O-M-I. By the way, these are like the
oppressive. R-O-M-I.
This is why people tune in.
They do. And the people that really, really, truly know, their eyes are bleeding right now. By the way, I is a palindrome.
Yes, it is, depending on which I you mean. For instance, you're not saying affirmative, and you're also not distinguishing yourself.
Correct.
You were
I'm referring to a visual organ.
So, like, what if we started... Everyone wants to call something like 555 or 545 a palindrome, which it's not. What if we started calling I a palindromic number? Okay, I'm super tired, man.
We are that sort of rebel, so we could.
We could do that. All right, so much to their chagrin, this week's show is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to tell you more about that later.
By the way, episode. Not a palindrome.
Also not a palindrome. All right, so...
Can I take us down a rabbit hole real quick?
Hold on, let me climb out of this one first.
No. Go ahead and hold sit on, in it, because...
Hold on. Okay, yeah, take us down a rabbit hole.
All right, hand me the shovel. I'm jumping down in that rabbit hole and taking us deeper. My favorite palindromic joke
okay.
of all time comes from Monty Python.
Okay.
And it's in, I believe it's in the cheese shop sketch.
Okay.
Where, the shopper, in this case John Cleese, is sent to the cheese shop owner's brother in Bolton to get the cheese that he wants.
Okay.
And when he gets there, it's the same cheese shop, and he doesn't have the cheese. Uh-huh. And he Michael Palin says that, you know, the mistake is John Cleese's, and that he's actually in the wrong place, and it's a palindrome. And John Cleese says the palindrome of Bolton would be not lob, which in and of itself is very funny.
Yes.
But most people miss the underlying joke. There is no palindrome of Bolton.
Yeah, that,
not
that
Bob
is the
is just
that is the joke.
But so many people miss that.
They
get the silly part. The palindrome would be not lob,
right?
Which of course is not a palindrome.
But what if people actually did get it?
Then those people are awesome.
Okay, all right. So if you got it out there, you're awesome. Jeff said so. You heard it here first.
And if you didn't get it until just now, that's okay, because now you're in on it too.
I think by definition, you said that they're not awesome. I'm pretty sure you heard it here first. Jeff Gamut says you're not awesome.
And that's this week's show. Thanks for tuning in.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking of Brian being Brian, I approached you with a smart home situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago.
And I recommended the shop in Bolton.
You did. And I immediately went to Knotlob.
As one does.
Where they didn't have it. So here's the thing. Now, I think all of us pretty much tend to take our paths in life, whatever that particular path may be, and whichever particular aspect of your path through life may be at that particular moment, in a very, like, you know, like, this is the path that I've taken, and so this is what's informing my thinking.
So we could sum that up by saying, this is the way.
This is the way, right. So when I first started doing smart devices in my home, I actually had roommates, Silicon Valley, it's expensive to live here, and I was pretty focused on my particular part of the house, because, you know, turns out the rest of the house wasn't mine. So I put in smart light bulbs, for instance, in my bedroom. I put them in my office, and that was how I did smart lighting in my house. And then when I moved to my current place, which I have by myself, I did the same thing. I put smart light bulbs in the light fixtures that I had, because it's what it made sense to do. Well, I'm moving again, and I'm moving into a place that's got a ton of, like, can lighting in the ceiling, like a whole lot of it. And they're high ceilings, and there are these can LED lights already there. And I was thinking, man, I'm going to have to not have smart lighting in my house, and it's really annoying. I've really come to enjoy it.
Sure.
So then I realized that what I could do instead is leave the lighting in place that's there, but just replace my light switches.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the first time I had thought about doing that. I mean, I didn't need to do, I could get smart bulbs and achieve what I needed in the previous two locations where I've done this. And mm-hmm. and the reality is that for folks that have, like, a lot of lights, it it's not just if you have a lot of lights. Because one of the things that I have learned through being a smart house person, or, you know, sort of a smart house person, is
a trendsetter.
What's that?
A trendsetter.
No, absolutely not. Is that when a device needs to be replaced, it's a pain in the butt to do, at least with HomeKit, because you have to, you can't just like plug in a new bulb, for instance, if you have to change the bulb out, that because HomeKit doesn't know what's in that socket. All they know is that it's not, they're not seeing the old device and they're suddenly seeing a new device. What do you want to do with it?
Right.
Which yep. then also means that you have to replace it with any kind of scenes and automation that you may have set up.
Total pain in the butt.
Yep. Now, is it the same way with Alexa? Do you have that same issue?
Oh, yeah. It's actually much better with HomeKit.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, with Alexa, the system is it's less friendly, and that's because HomeKit will recognize what a device is, even if it doesn't know where you want it, where you've put it, what scenes you want it in. With a lady, and I'm sorry, everyone, that I slipped up and said her actual name.
I said sorry about the same thing. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, with a lady, it knows what the device is in the context that, it's identified as, say, a Hue light bulb, but it doesn't know what a light bulb is.
Oh.
So now, when you do things like, say, hey, S lady, turn off all the lights, or turn on all the lights.
Yeah.
You haven't had to set anything up other than...
Right, that is an option with HomeKit.
Yeah, you can just do that. And HomeKit knows what light bulbs are. So it knows what to do when you give it that very general command. A-Lady does not. So you have to assign that light bulb to everything that it would apply to. So, for example, when I set up an A-Lady command to turn off all the lights, I actually had to create an action that's called all the lights.
Right.
And then I had to add every single light bulb to the command all the lights. And then I could do that. So... So it's not really any better when you go to other platforms, and at least with HomeKit, it's smart enough to understand what a device is and what it's supposed to do.
Okay, well, here's my revelation. Mm-hmm. Light switches, wall switches, if you replace those with a smart switch, you're probably not going to have to replace those again.
Probably not.
So you don't have the same periodic, oh, good Lord, I've got to go through this again. You know, you put in your normal light bulb, hopefully an LED low energy bulb, into your socket, and the light switch is still going to control those lights. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess there is a trade-off from the standpoint of depending on your light switch, actually, depending on the lighting setup in your house, power, the dimming, and possibly color.
Well, for the dimming, that one's easier to overcome in the scenario that you've just presented.
Okay.
Because you've got your smart switch on the wall, and let's say you have six candlelights in the ceiling, and they're dumb bolts.
Eve finds this... I'm going to lose my voice. Eve is very excited by this. So I'm going to mute while you keep talking.
Okay. So you have your six can lights in the ceiling. When you decide that you're ready to replace whatever was already in your place with LED versions of those can light bulbs, make sure that whatever you get supports dimming, because not all LED bulbs will support dimming. And you'll know if you have one that doesn't support dimming, because when you start your dimmer, the bulb is off as you're raising up the dimmer, and then suddenly it turns on.
So if you have a dimmable switch already, and theoretically you have dimmable bulbs, and I'm talking about your original dumb switch,
right?
then replacing that switch with a smart switch that supports dimming would still give you that control.
Absolutely.
But not on an individual light bulb basis, although that's probably not an issue for most folks.
Right. Yeah. In this case, it works exactly like you had before, except that you have the ability to control it remotely and automate things with it as well.
But you wouldn't, I guess there aren't really a whole lot of dumb light bulbs that are color changeable. So that's probably not much of an issue.
You know, now I'm trying to think, have I ever seen,
how would that? Yeah. How would you even,
you'd have to put a,
do that
you'd
with
probably have to put a
technology.
Switch right on the bulb or have like a, this would be awful, which means someone has done it. You have like a switch inside the bulb so that when you flip the light switch on and off in succession a certain number of times.
Oh, good Lord.
And then it changes the bulb color.
Okay, you're not in charge of lighting.
The reason that this came to mind is because I remember playing with a smart bulb years ago, that the way to change programming for it actually involved putting it in a light socket and flipping the light switch in a specific sequence. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
Yeah. So let's go with, you're not going to get a dumb bulb that changes color.
Right. So, so in general, I wonder, like, I've changed the color the most, I think, in the living room for TV watching. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most. But regardless, doing smart switches instead of smart bulbs makes sense in a lot of different ways.
It does. And you just brought up your living room where you're watching TV. And that's a perfect place to do a hybrid setup where you have smart switches for the cam lights in the ceiling. But then you have lamps. And those you can put on, you can put in smart bulbs where you can change colors.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. And what sparked off, I mean, like, I think the living room has got like six can lights. And taking six functional LED lights and replacing them it seems like a huge waste. Not to mention a hassle.
Well, it depends on your use case, but for a lot of people, I think that's a situation where a smart switch is going to be a much better, a much more realistic choice.
Yeah, I agree with that. So anyway, that's going to end up being what I do. I'm going to replace them with smart switches. And the thing that I had contacted you about was to see if you had a smart switch that you recommended, and you did. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's the Lutron smart switch. And
do they just make the one smart switch?
Well, what I'm thinking of is I believe they still call it the Cassetta line, product line.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and I believe that they make multiple smart switches. But going with...
I only found the one that has the dimmer also, and I don't need all of them to have dimmers.
Well, I believe the way that Lutron designed that Cassetta switch is to be a three-way, three-pole switch. And Ryan.
That's what she said.
The way it's designed, it's assumed that you want to have the same control everywhere.
What are you saying?
Okay, so the dimmer part.
Yeah.
The assumption is that you're going to have a light switch at either end of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want the physical controls everywhere. It was probably also more.
Yeah, but I don't need a dimmer at all on some of them.
I agree, but I don't think that they make one that is like a remote switch where it just has like the basic.
I'm thinking about A, other people in my house, and B, when I'm no longer in the house, and then someone wondering why the dimmer doesn't work.
Well, okay, so here's what I have done. I have installed smart switches where I want them. Mm-hmm. And then when I've moved, I take them out and put the original switches back in.
Yeah, and obviously I could do that.
Which, honestly, that's what I'd recommend you do. Because when you move, you still want to have smart switches, probably.
Of course. Plus, I don't necessarily want to bestow the gift of smart lighting on my landlord when he didn't necessarily ask for it. But in this particular case, it may be something I do want to do.
Right. Okay. Well, then in that case, there you go.
I'm wondering if I'm going to end up doing some kind of hybrid with Lutron and then some non-Lutron ones, because I did not find a Lutron switch that did not have dimming. And it all feel right to put that on lights that don't have dimming, because again, it seems just, I don't know, regardless, this is, you recommend Lutron. You said that you have used it. It works with multiple systems. It works with the A-Lady. It works with Google system. It works with Siri and / HomeKit. And then I think it does someone else too. Does it do like the Wemo thing?
Probably Zigbee.
Yeah, Zigbee. I believe so. And you've used it on two of those systems, right? HomeKit and A-Lady?
And A-Lady. And the only reason I haven't used it with Google Home is because that's just not how I use a Google Home. That's for testing, not for real world use.
Right. That makes sense. All right. Well, I'm pretty excited about experimenting with this and seeing how it works. Yeah, definitely excited about that. And you know what else I'm excited about,
Jeff? Oh, do tell. Do tell.
LinkedIn Jobs. That's right. LinkedIn Jobs. You create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. You can focus on candidates with the skills and experience you need. You can use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people. And then use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Now, the thing I like most about LinkedIn Jobs, if you're a longtime listener, you've heard me mention this before, it's super nice. It is the interface. It is the tools that they give you for managing both your job postings and the candidates themselves. It makes the whole hiring process a lot smoother, a lot easier, a lot faster. Just a lot easier to deal with. And that is super valuable, especially right now. It's hard to hire. And LinkedIn Jobs can help that. Now, LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates worth interviewing faster. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Okay, Jeff, you also, I believe, I'm pinning the first topic on you. You wanted the other, there was another topic that you wanted to talk about as opposed to the one that I wanted to talk about. I'm not saying that I don't want it. Anyway, digital IDs.
Yeah, whatever, Brian, whatever.
Digital IDs. What do you
invite me on the show?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I roll.
And this is what happens. I know this is what happens. Uh-huh. And yet I said yes. Anyhow. I know.
It's on you.
See, I knew we'd get there.
I am so tired today. That's funny to me. All right. So regardless, you proposed for topic number two on today's Apple Context Machine, episode number 555, which is a palindromic number, or possibly a palindromic number. The jury is still out. I mean, the jury is not actually out. We just haven't checked in with them. So what do you want to talk about digital IDs? What's the bean about it?
Well, okay. So the thing with digital IDs, this is gaining more public awareness because we have iOS 15 coming soon. And, I mean, at this point, it could be only days away. And part of iOS 15 is the digital ID in wallet. And I've seen a lot of people taking a new interest in having an ID on their phone, or what does it mean when they have an ID on their phone?
Yeah.
It's a brave new world. So what exactly is this, and how can people use it? And should they use it? Right. So a lot of states already have digital ID. And I'll use Colorado as an example.
Okay.
We have digital ID here, and the app that you use to get this all set up is just straight up a dumpster fire. I mean, it is awful.
Okay.
I
believe you.
Once it's all set up, which can take days of frustration, now you have a digital version of your ID in an app on your phone. And that's great. But now you have another hurdle to overcome, which is figuring out where can you actually use your digital ID? Because your state says we've got it, it doesn't mean that you can practically use it or even use it at all. So first you need to find out where your digital ID is going to be recognized and accepted. So if we look at what Apple's doing with digital IDs in wallet, that means that we have two states that are going to support it initially. As I recall, isn't it like Arizona and Alabama? I'm totally pulling these out of the research in my mind. Yeah.
Those are not the first that leap to mind.
And yet here we are.
Which states support Apple digital ID? Let's see if we can find that.
And then there's like four or five others.
Oh, you were close. Arizona and Georgia.
And Georgia. I was geographically close. Yeah. And then coming a little bit later, I know Utah is one of the other states, and there's like three or four others.
Not California?
No, California's not on the list.
LOL.
Yeah, it's a... So anyhow, it'll be a very small number of states where this is usable. And this is going to be usable at airports as a way to identify yourself to TSA when you're going through checkpoints. So that means that the airport has to support it as well. So the number of places you'll actually be able to use this at launch is going to be stunningly limited. And it doesn't mean that this is going to be a failure. It just means that you have to start somewhere.
You do have to start somewhere.
Right. So if I compare this to what we have in Colorado, we've had digital ID for... what year is this now? 2021? For 2 years now. And
yeah, it's only been 2021 for less than a full year.
Yeah, but it was like partway through the year when we got it. So I think we're at about 2 years now.
I was being obtuse.
Mostly pedantic.
Yes.
So we're at a place right now where Colorado State Patrol will accept this as valid identification. And then five police departments throughout the entire state. So
that's through the app that Colorado provides.
Right. So this is Colorado's own system, and it is essentially unsupported throughout the state of Colorado.
Well, and it begs the question, do you have to unlock your phone to use it?
No.
Oh, how's that work?
Well, actually, no, that's not true. With this app, you do, because you have to be able to present a barcode, but you do not hand your phone over to law enforcement, which, by the way, that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's one of the things I want to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So let's talk about what you do in Colorado. You have this barcode thing. And so when the state trooper scans the barcode, then it sends the data request to the terminal in their patrol car. So when they get back to their patrol car, the verification of who you are is done.
Okay.
And so that's how that one works. So the way that the system that Apple is adopting, which, by the way, is an open standard. So it's not like Apple's created something from scratch or totally proprietary with the way they're doing the digital ID thing. It's using proximity, so RFID, and then it can transmit the requested information, but you are choosing which information is allowed in most situations. So like if you're stopped by police in an area where this is eventually accepted as a valid form of identification, they'll get the information that's appropriate for them to have. If you use it, say, in a liquor store, then they'll get the information that's appropriate for them. So like in a liquor store, all they really need to know is that you're over 21.
Sure.
And so that's the verification they'll get. So they won't get your home address or any of that.
And what's to stop me letting my fictitious little brother use my ID? Take my phone with him.
That's a really great question. Okay, so the way
it seems like it should require. Actually, even if it required Face ID, all I have to do is set up a profile for my fictitious little brother.
I'm so glad you went there, because that's exactly what people are going to do, and then they're going to be so disappointed when it doesn't work. And that's because the way the Apple digital ID works is that verification is bound to a single identity that you've set up. So you could set up an identity, Face ID identity, for your little brother.
Fictitious.
But when your fictitious little brother, right. And then when you set up all your digital wallet stuff, you have to choose which of those identities is going to be linked to the ID.
So is it going to require a Face ID authentication before it displays?
Yes. Yes.
Will that unlock your phone?
No, it will not.
Well, then that is very good. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Apple has thought that through.
Yeah, Apple has thought this through really well. So, yeah, what Apple's doing is making this as secure as they can, which is great.
It is good, because the police have been known to go fishing on devices that are open.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what you wanted to talk about, which is unlocked phones and handing over devices to whoever asks for them. Could be law enforcement. Could be the clerk at the liquor store that wants to verify your identity. Don't hand your phone to anyone ever.
So
I'm offering this advice not as a legal expert, but as someone that is privacy and security conscious. When someone asks for your phone and you hand it over to them, you have lost complete control over your device. Period.
Yeah.
And you never ever want that. For example, if you're using a digital ID thing and a law enforcement officer says, well, I need your phone. Here, give me your phone. I would always say no if I were in that situation.
At a principle.
And yeah, because it's my phone. And if I relinquish control over that phone, now basically anything can happen with it. And I'm just screwed because I don't have control of the device.
That's, of course, assuming they don't have a warrant for your phone. That's another issue.
That's a totally different thing. I mean, if they're in a situation where they can really take your phone, they're just going to take it. And there'll be the warrant to go along with it, or exigent circumstances, or there will be some reason why they're just going to take it. And it's not just phishing where they're hoping to find something. Because if they just take your phone and go fishing through it to find whatever, and you didn't give it to them to do that, then ultimately that's going to bite them in court, because that's not how you do it. So don't give your phone. And people that are thinking, yeah, but you know, when the police say at a traffic stop, I need your phone so that I can see the digital ID. No, that's not how digital IDs work.
Right.
They are designed so that your phone does not leave your possession to make this whole thing happen. And anyone that is telling you otherwise is either misinformed or is intentionally trying to mislead you.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. So I would love to have my insurance card display without me opening my phone. And
that would be cool.
I would love to have my driver's license display without me unlocking my phone, but still be, you know, still require some kind of authentication. And I don't know that there's any, I know there are several states, there are many states that accept a digital image of your insurance card.
Mm-hmm.
But that currently requires opening your phone.
Yes. And yeah, if I were to show digital proof of insurance, that would involve unlocking my phone and going into the Colorado ID app.
Right.
Now, at least in Colorado, we don't have to physically show proof of insurance anymore.
Ah.
Even though you have to carry the card with you.
But that's different from state by state too. And I don't think that there's any effort to add insurance ID to insurance proof to these digital ID systems. And that's a shame. That would be handy and useful.
That would be handy. Yeah. It would be really handy. It would be interesting. How would they do that? Because you would want it done in a way where it's validated so that whatever insurance card is in your wallet is one that's not forged.
Well, but I don't think that needs to be a part of the system because, I mean, that's possible now. No one's thinking about that. No one's asking about that. So I don't know that we need to go that route to have it be able to. I mean, it seems to me that you need another entry in a digital ID system that requires authentication that would instead display insurance card information.
Yeah, I agree. That would be nice. I'm just thinking farther down the road with it.
But that's fair. We can do that today. We could Photoshop our insurance cards today.
Right, which I think is one of the reasons why Colorado eventually went to a system where your insurance is linked through a database to your ID.
Mm.
So when you get a traffic stop and they pull up your ID, it pulls up your insurance data as well. So if you have an insurance card that shows it expires in 4 months, but you stop paying your premiums, they'll know that you don't have valid insurance.
Right. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. So this is potentially doable without it being a Brave New World.
Yeah, I agree.
And it seems like, based on my understanding of your understanding of Apple system, really that's what matters. That Apple is headed down the right path for this, the sensible path that is both convenient and maintains our privacy too.
Yes,
and control.
Yeah, I think Apple's doing this in a very responsible way, which is great. So, Brian, are you ready to stop carrying your physical ID with you?
Yeah, I'd love to not do that.
I would love to, but you can't. You still need to carry your physical ID all the time.
Yeah, for sure. But I would like to be at that. You asked me if I was ready. The answer is yes, I'm ready. But I know one can't do that yet.
Same. Yeah. And I would love to not have to carry a physical ID with me. Actually, I would love to not have to carry any cards with me. I mean, I have Apple Pay, and soon we'll have the digital ID and wallet. I would love to be able to leave my physical ID and all of my credit cards in a lockbox somewhere and not carry them anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just recently purged my wallet of most of my credit cards.
Nice.
Yeah. Because of Apple Pay.
Yeah. Yeah. I carry a credit card because there's so many places here still that don't accept Apple Pay. But
yeah, man, I'm in Silicon Valley. It's a bubble here.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, this is not the real world.
It's not. It's a very exciting world, a very expensive world. But hey, you can use Apple Pay pretty much everywhere.
Just about everywhere, yeah. I mean, certainly not quite everywhere, but just about everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere enough where if you left home for the day without any credit cards, you would still be able to buy whatever it is that you need to buy.
Yeah, as long as I have my phone or my watch with me, or both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, I want to thank you. Actually, hold on. Let me do this. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Jeff, tell us where our listeners can find you.
Well, how about Twitter and Instagram? Mm-hmm. I'm yes. Jay Gamut, both places.
I recommend both.
I have a YouTube channel. So youtube.com/JayGamut.
Jay Gamut. I see what you did there.
See, I'm very clever like that. Did you know that I am the interim host for The Big Show and The Mac Show for British Tech Network?
No, I did not know
that. All month long? Yeah. Ewan Rankin, he's the host of those shows. Mm-hmm. But scheduling and everything meant in his world meant that he just can't be there this month. So I have become the interim host.
Fantastic. Well, then I certainly recommend that too. Something else I recommend is LinkedIn jobs. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That is linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. I want to thank them for sponsoring this week's episode of the Apple Context Machine. And on that note, we will say simply,
not lob.